1. October 1810. A brisk gale swept through Royal York Crescent in Bristol, sending brown and yellow leaves scurrying down the street and through the wrought-iron gates, where they collected below at the windows and doors of the servants' quarters. Phineas Stropford, the Viscount Hayworth, knocked at number 17 and presented his card. It took only one glance for the butler to drop his quelling regard and open the door wide to admit Phineas.
"Mr. Stokes is expecting you, Lord Hayworth. I will make him aware of your arrival. Please step inside. May I take your hat and coat?"
Phineas divested himself of these and waited while the butler moved with quick steps to a room farther down in the corridor. Phineas wasn't nervous. He would not allow himself to be, despite the fact that he was here to set an irrevocable seal on his future. He brushed the creases out of his sleeves and glanced down. His cream pantaloons were impeccable, but there was a smear of mud on his hessians. It annoyed him, but there was nothing he could do about it now. Besides, he supposed he did not need to impress Erasmus Stokes. The butler returned within minutes.
Mr. Stokes will see you. Will you please follow me?
He led Phineas to his master's study, and Stokes stood as soon as he entered.
Come in, my lord.
Stokes bowed, then advanced to meet Phineas, who took the room in at a glance. There was an imposing desk at one end, where Stokes had been sitting, and a Sheraton table beyond that boasted an intricate model of a sailing frigate. Two bergère armchairs, brocaded in green and gold threads, with mahogany armrests, were comfortably placed before the fire, and a large painting that Phineas guessed to be by Joseph Turner sat above the mantel, depicting a sloop lost on a stormy sea. He wondered whether Stokes's tastes were naturally elegant, or whether he had furnished his home with the intention of impressing his guests.
"You were looking at the Turner, I see. It was not easy to get my hands on one, but I was determined. I will have nothing but the best."
Stokes rubbed his hands as he chuckled, and Phineas had his answer. Stokes owned the art to impress. Phineas turned and acknowledged Stokes's comment with an inclination of his head. The servant was waiting by the door, and Stokes barked out orders for him to bring brandy, then gestured for Phineas to sit in one of the chairs facing the fire. He did so, and Stokes took the other chair.
"I will not hide the matter from you, my lord. I was highly gratified that you would condescend to consider my offer, once I'd learned you were in search of a wife."
Stokes frowned suddenly, and, much in the gauche manner Phineas expected of him, barreled forward.
"Not that you're doing me any favours, mind you. Kitty is no eyesore, and I've sweetened the cream pot to a degree you must admit is handsome. Why, when I told my associate what I was paying, I should hope you are not bandying about your sister's name in such a public way. I assure you, I am not accustomed to having my own name spoken of so openly."
Phineas dropped Stokes's gaze for fear his disgust over the nature of their dealings would become apparent.
"No, that is to say..."
Stokes floundered.
"I've told one or two of my closest associates, but I would not call it bandying anything about. I would be much obliged if you would keep the details of our negotiations private. You may use my name in your business dealings, as I am sure you have every right to do. My name is what you purchased, after all."
Phineas paused. The whole of it was distasteful, but he would be frank this once.
"However, I would like to stipulate that my private life, even when it is joined with your sister's, will not be open for scrutiny." "Of course, my lord," Stokes replied hastily.
He cleared his throat and frowned at the painting as an awkward silence settled between them. When the door opened, Stokes leapt up and gestured for the butler to place the flat-bottomed crystal decanter on the table in front of them. Phineas studied the strange design, coming to the conclusion that it might be meant for a ship captain's use to keep the decanter from tipping over on the rolling seas. Stokes picked up the glass of brandy his butler had poured for him.
"When the French border was still open, I purchased enough of these bottles to fill a cellar. There are not many left, but I don't think you will find anything to complain of, my lord." "No, indeed," Phineas said, taking one sip, then another. "It is rather good. I have nothing like it myself, although I believe my father has a few bottles.